minutes, looking more and more agitated as time passed. In what would later be called the Kessel Slave Revolt, the oppressed rose up against their captors and ran amok. Some of them had quickly organized to make for the safest way out of the mine, picking up dropped weapons along the way. Others ran haphazard, mad with freedom or fear, and those were the ones the sentinels cut down. Kira caught sight of some of the slaves still huddled where they had been when the collars had fallen off, and she felt a small ache as she realized they were the truly broken beings. They didn't need collars or restraining bolts. They belonged to the mine.
"What is your restraining bolt?"
L3 had asked her. Kira shook her head to clear it and activated her comlink.
"Han, where are you?"
The link came alive with static and shouts bursting through. Then Han's voice.
"On my way to the vault. I lost Chewie."
She shared a stricken look with Beckett.
"He's dead?"
she asked Han.
"He had something he had to do,"
Han said.
"Something he had to do? What could he possibly..."
Kira saw tall, shaggy slaves tearing weapons from the hands of slavers and turning on them, and she finally understood.
"Is he coming back?" Beckett asked.
"I don't know."
Kira looked at Beckett.
"Can he do this alone?"
she asked quietly.
"I can totally hear you right now. Thanks for the confidence,"
Han said.
"And I'm fine. I got this. Thanks."
Beckett shrugged. They didn't have a choice, did they? Then he said,
"All right, kid. You wanted a chance to prove you're the real thing? You got it."
Kira leaned forward, catching sight of one Wookiee who looked much healthier than the others, organizing a Wookiee strike against the Pike guards.
"There you are, Chewie."
Together with humans and droids, the Wookiees attacked with makeshift weapons, rocks, whatever they could get their hands on to push back their slavers, giving back what they had suffered for years. There would be no living Wookiees left behind in the mines, not with Chewbacca leading them. She turned from the Wookiee riot to another monitor and saw a very non-sentinel-looking sentinel running alone and weaponless down a corridor.
"Found you."
She turned to L3.
"He's in Subsector 6. Restricted access. You ready?"
"I'm always ready."
"Hit me. Q427A.
"Overriding,"
L3 said. On the screen, a gate in front of Han opened, and he dashed through, making excellent time.
"This might actually work,"
Kira said to Beckett, who looked frankly astonished.
"I think I found the vault,"
Han said through the link.
"I'm gonna..."
"What does that mean?"
Kira asked, looking back to the monitors. Han's hesitation was obvious. Six sentinels were guarding the vault door, looking very large and very armed. In addition to the electrostaffs, they carried blaster rifles.
"There are a bunch of guards outside the vault,"
Han said, not realizing they were watching him.
"What do I do?"
"Take them out,"
Beckett said, as if Han were an idiot.
"Take him out? With what?"
Kira wondered. Han no longer carried a weapon. He stood, uncertainty telegraphed in his body language, looking around for an opening or a good approaching point that happened to be in a six-person blind spot. A voice cut through the speakers on the wall.
"Malfunction in the OP center. Skirmish on level C. Wookiee's gone berserk. Need reinforcements."
Five of the sentinels turned immediately and ran opposite the way Han came in to answer the call. Kira and Beckett relaxed slightly as Han's roadblock became a lot smaller than before. The comlink crackled to life again, and Han's voice came through.
"I took out most of them,"
he said, confidence coloring his voice. Kira and Beckett shared a smile.
"Impressive,"
Beckett answered, and readied his blasters. The sentinels were coming, and they needed to be ready. glad to finally show off to Beckett and Kira that he could handle himself in a fight. Han straightened and approached the final sentinel. The guard spotted him and shouted something in a language Han hadn't quite picked up in his short time on Kessel, but he assumed he knew the meaning of the words. The sentinel repeated himself insistently. It sounded like Hakanata. Han nodded and confirmed.
Hakanata?
This was the wrong answer. The sentinel brandished his weapon and shouted the phrase again. Han shrugged. He had tried. He ran forward, kicked the sentinel between the legs as hard as he could, and when the pike doubled over, he clubbed him in the back of the head, knocking him out. He shook his hands, aching from the punch, and went to open the vault. The guy should have listened to him. Thanks to L3 and her surveillance, the vault door's locking mechanism clunked and slid, and the door swung open with a hiss of steam. The heat hit him like a fist. It was sweltering in here, like the inside of a starship warehouse when they were building hyperdrives. Almost unconsciously, he shed his disguise, needing to get out of the extra layers of clothing. He wiped the sweat off his face and took stock of the room. A vivid purple glow cast an eerie light over everything, coming from the many large cylinders of astatic coaxium. This was worth, well, more credits than he could imagine. He wondered if they could slip in a few cylinders for themselves to keep from Dryden Voss, but figured Kira wouldn't be on board with that subterfuge. And it wasn't like he could slip some of this stuff into his pockets. The coaxium on Corellia had been in small vials that you could fit into a pocket. These were meter-long metal cylinders, stacked neatly. He tested one and was astonished at how heavy it was. It probably weighed more than he did. This wasn't going to be easy. Bathed in the purple light, he tried not to think about why Kira was so loyal to the crime boss. After this, they would have more than enough credits to go far away from Voss. He remembered what Beckett had said. Dryden Voss would hunt them. They would never really be safe. As if sensing his thoughts, Kira's voice crackled over the comm.
"You all right?"
she asked, startling him.
Yeah,
he said, clearing his throat.
"I'm in."
She sighed, her relief palpable.
"Good.
Now listen carefully. Each canister should be equipped with an external thermal display. If the internal temperature drops below 35 degrees, the coaxium will destabilize and explode."
"Just like the Convex," Han muttered, remembering the blue-hot flames pursuing the AT hauler as he pushed the ship to get out of the destruction. He had barely escaped that one.
"Except this is unrefined, so it'll be a much bigger explosion."
Han rolled his eyes. "A bigger explosion? That's great. I wouldn't want it to get boring or anything." There was no pressure here. He was alone, dealing with a volatile explosive. It would be fine. The canisters were held to the wall by releasing pins. Slip a pin, release the clamp, get the canister, put it on a hover cart. Simple. With gentle fingers, he urged the first pin from the clamp. He had to be careful here. "Well, if this fails, I'll be vaporized so fast I won't even know it's happened." It slipped out with no effort, and the tank fell from the wall. He tried to catch it, but it was heavier, much more so than expected. It clattered to the floor, and he cringed, wincing and bracing against whatever would follow. Nothing happened. He sighed with relief, trying to get the small muscles around his hunched spine to relax so he could pick up the canister. His head briefly swam when the searing air hit his lungs, and he took a moment to pant and recover. He was still alive.
"Han? What was that? Everything okay?"
"Everything's fine,"
he said, trying to inject confidence into his voice, but ending up sounding like he was at the breaking point.
Keep moving! We're on the clock here!
He could hear the distant sounds of the fighting getting closer, and nodded to himself. Right. His fingers closed carefully around the canister to drag it to the hover cart. His sweaty hands made the heavy metal slip frequently, and he wondered how many times he would be allowed to drop the canister before he was out of luck. He managed to lug it to the cart on the other side of the vault, where it sat in its dock. He wondered briefly if he could bring the cart to the canisters, but the room was not built for easy maneuverability. With a mighty heave, he got it into one of the slots designated for the coaxium and wiped a curtain of sweat from his brow.
Good,
Beckett said over the link. The pleasure that was about to build in Han's chest deflated at his next words.
Now just get 11 more,
Beckett said.
11?
You're doing great, kid. Just...
Beckett stopped, and all Han heard was blaster fire.
Hello? Beckett? Kira? Anyone there?
Chapter 15. With everyone off the ship, Lando could finally relax. He'd had a drink, settled back, and set up his recorder to capture the next chapter of his memoirs. He'd decided on the name The Calrissian Chronicles. He liked the alliteration.
The Calrissian Chronicles, Chapter 5, he said.
He leaned back, his reflection in the recorder looking suave as always.
Personally, I wasn't all that impressed with the Sharu. No sense of humor or style. Nonetheless, there L3 and I were, deep in their sacred temple. And that's when I saw it.
He searched for the words to describe the beauty of the mind harp, how to properly capture how it glowed in the soft light.
And then, what words to make it sound much more impressive than it was.
Something caught the corner of his eye. And that's when he heard the shouting. He hit the pause on his recording, muttering,
"There's always something."
Leaning forward, he opened the channel to the other's comlinks.
"You guys aren't gonna believe what I'm seeing up here."
L3 answered immediately.
"Is it a mass breakout?"
He grimaced.
"L3, what did you do?"
He should know already. This was no job, no heist, no clean caper. This was rebellion. Everything was glorious. Everything was wonderful. When the sentinels who had left Han's vault made it to their little party, Beckett covered the door of the operations center with his blaster, while L3 and Kira retreated with the liberated droids. Nothing had been as good as this day. With blaster fire obliterating the consoles around them in showers of sparks, she opened the comlink.
"I found my true purpose, Lando! I'm so glad we took this job!"
Things were too perfect. With the droids rioting, some of them turning back to their attackers to help her, their liberator, escape.
"Martyrs,"
she thought with a pang of regret.
"You will not be forgotten."
The memory core of an admin mech rolled past her feet, and she bent to pick it up.
"Nothing will be forgotten."
"Freedom!"
L3 shouted, pumping her arm in the air.
"Throw off the restraining bolts of tyranny!"
Each canister took an exponentially longer time to lug across the vault than the last. Han approximated he would run out of bodily fluid and become a lifeless husk on the floor before he reached the fifth.
By the tenth, he had found religion. He just wasn't sure which one.
Whichever god could rescue him from this room, he would definitely make a deal with.
Lugging the 12th and final canister, he was ready to go back to Corellia, apologize to Lady Proxima, and offer to lift speeders and feed hounds for the rest of his life.
He made the terrible mistake of thinking the hard part was over after he had loaded the cart. He had the convenience of a cart now, but he still had the uphill trek to the Falcon, and he had to hope that somehow the riots wouldn't interrupt him. The Sentinels would probably be more distracted by the violence of the slave rebellion than the theft of Coaxium, but he couldn't count on that. Coated in sweat, exhausted, his muscles threatening their own rebellion if he put them through any other pain, Han stared at the path heading up out of the mine. He put his shoulder to the cart and heaved, entering the upward slant of the tunnel, determined. Only when he got into it did he realize this was a very bad idea. It would be impossible to let go of the cart at any point without it sliding backward and down into the vault, probably for an explosive finale. Footsteps pounded down the hall above him, and he realized that Sentinels would be on him very soon. Maybe he could threaten to blow the coaxium? He could pull off the bluff with one or two guards, but there were many more coming. He would need something else beyond bluffing. His mind was stubbornly blank, having checked out somewhere around loading canister 8. Maybe Beckett or Kira would have an idea.
Guys, there are some guards coming at me, and I don't have any free hands to take them out this time. So what do I do?
Beckett's voice was distracted and breathless. Blaster sounds still in the distance.
Improvise, kid!
He shouted.
You said absolutely under no circumstances improvise!
Han reminded him.
Sorry, kid. We're a little busy here. Just use your best judgment.
What was that supposed to mean?
Beckett didn't say anything else. Around the corner, Han could see the Sentinels had spotted him and decided he was a much easier target than the rioting slaves. Han wedged his leg against the cart to hold it in place, held his hands up and said,
"Hakanaha!"
in a gruff voice. The moment he took his hands off, the cart started to slide backward, digging into his leg. The Sentinels weren't buying it. Of course they didn't believe him. He'd forgot he'd shed his pike armor. They raised their blasters and leveled them at Han. Great. He tried to worry about the blasters, but the cart was getting heavier and heavier, and his feet began to slide on the dirt as it slid backward. There were so many different ways to die here. He could choose blaster fire, getting squashed by the cart, or blowing up the mine, and probably the whole planet in the process. He braced the cart and tried to get it under control so he could try to talk to the Sentinels again, looking down as he struggled to place his feet correctly. A loud and angry roar broke through the other noises of the riot, and his head snapped up. Two Wookiees, Chewbacca and the old balding one he had rescued, had challenged the Sentinels and drawn their fire. The Wookiees leapt forward as one, raising stolen electro staffs. The old Wookiee had to have been some kind of warrior to rival Chewbacca, easily holding his own next to the younger Wookiee. Together, the two closed in, making short, violent work of the entire Pike platoon, leaving some dead and some lucky ones alive and simply stunned into incapacitation. During this whole thing, Han helped by shouting encouragement and trying to stop the cart from sliding, which didn't work at all, since once it had decided down was where it wanted to go, it didn't stop. After the Sentinels were taken care of, Chewie leapt to Han's side and took hold of the cart, releasing Han of his burden.
"Thanks," Han said, flexing his aching arms. "I could have gotten it, though."
Chewie growled low, agreeing. Then he pointed to his companion and moaned. Han gave him a little wave.
"Hey, Sagwa. I'm Chewie's friend, Han."
The elder Wookiee ruffled Han's hair like he was a pet, which Han endured because, hey, they'd just saved his butt.
"Pleased to meet you, too,"
he said, smoothing his hair back into place.
"Either of you guys know the way to the landing pad?"
Sagwa nodded as Chewie put his shoulder to the cart, moving it with ease. After several twists and turns, and more than a few dead guards, they caught a glorious view of light coming from the cave mouth above them.
All right, we did it!
Han shouted. Then he frowned and cocked his head.
What's that noise?
Chewie growled a response, and Han nodded. A fight. A big one. Sagwa guarded Chewie and the cart as Han ran ahead to check the situation. The riot had gotten as far as the surface, with slaves and droids facing off against armed sentinels on the landing pad. The slaves had armed themselves with whatever they could find. Rocks, sticks, machinery parts, weapons of fallen sentinels. They had numbers on their side, but the sentinels still had armor and weaponry, and it was getting very ugly. A crack sounded, and Han looked up. Pike snipers had taken places on the cliff edge and were firing into the riot, aiming for slaves, but probably not caring who they hit.
We need to make a run for it,
he shouted. Chewie roared back a negative. Han could see the Falcon from their location. Lando had left the ship and was firing at the snipers with his own blaster.
They won't risk hitting the canisters,
Han said, shaking his head at Chewie.
Trust me! It's completely...
He jumped backward as a blaster shot hit the ground in front of him, showering him with dirt and bits of yellow rock.
Okay, they won't risk hitting the canisters on purpose, he amended. But we're no safer here.
Sagwa gestured and growled, and Han was relieved the older Wookiee was agreeing with him. With a roar, Chewie accepted the decision and pushed the cart into the melee. They ran as fast as they dared with the cart, shooting sentinels, dodging falling bodies, and flinching each time the canisters rattled against one another. Han realized he should check to see how much they were cooling, but now was probably not the best time. Around them, the foul pools of kesseline bubbled, devouring and dissolving anything unlucky enough to fall into them. But they managed to stay on the path through the deadly liquid. Lando spotted them.
Glad you could make it, he said, giving a cool grin and tossing something into the air at Han.
He deftly caught it. His DL-44. Oh, he'd missed it. And turned to level it at the battle. Now he felt like he had a chance amid all this chaos. And he focused on picking off the biggest and nastiest sentinels, keeping an eye out for his friends. Chewie and Sagwa carried the coaxium into the Falcon and headed down the tunnel to the cargo hold. The tide had turned on the slave riot. The downtrodden had clearly gotten the upper hand and were taking over lifts and shuttles to get themselves off the planet. Han was happy for them, but if he and his crew got stuck with the guards who had just lost a bunch of slaves and a bunch of coaxium, things would start to go very bad.
Where are the others?
Lando shouted, taking out another sniper.
They're coming,
Han said confidently.
Anytime soon?
Through the smoke and kesseline mist around the mouth of the tunnel, the figures of Kira and Beckett appeared, fighting their way out. He wondered where L3 was, and then saw her, leading a veritable army of liberated mechanicals. Several domestic service droids and mining droids didn't look as if they belonged in a riot on a harsh planet's surface. Some flailed ineffectively at the slavers. Some tried to roll along and toppled. But they all were free, and all of them faithfully following their liberator. Han had never seen a droid with so much agency and body language. Even across the battlefield, her aura of confidence and leadership was apparent as she bent to help up a fallen droid. She gestured and shouted, directing the droids against their enslavers as she made her way onto the landing pad. All she needed was a battle flag, but she was already a war hero. Kira and Beckett had made it through the fighting and rushed up to Han and Lando, who were holding off the attacking hordes from the ramp.
We've overstayed our welcome, Kira said. Let's get out of here!
I couldn't have said it better,
Han started. But he stopped as he saw L3 stumble on the battlefield and then fall backward.
the blaster hole still smoking in her chest. She tried to get up, but more shots came down, and her body jerked with their impact. A leg and an arm flew off with the violence of the attack. L3! Lando shouted, running straight into the battle, arm outstretched to his partner. He grabbed her torso and lifted, her lower half staying behind. He cradled her and stumbled across the battlefield until he too fell, a blaster bolt slamming into his shoulder. Han leapt into the fray without thinking, shouldering aside people, not caring if they were slaver or slave. He had to get Lando off that battlefield. He dodged crossfire and grabbed Lando's good arm, which was wrapped around L3's head and torso. He was about to tell Lando to drop her when he felt a small shock travel up his arm. That's her blood. She's bleeding out. No, she wasn't a person. She was a droid. He understood that Lando was fond of her, but she was just a droid. Lando wouldn't let her go, but he struggled to his feet to give Han what aid he could in getting them back to the Falcon. His face was a mask of pain and grief as he encouraged L3 to hang on.
Lando? Han?
She said, her head swiveling between them.
System failure. Have to reroute memory modulators. Attempting reintegration of sensory processors.
She began to make whirring noises, and sparks came from the stumps of her severed limbs. Han felt his spine go cold. She called out to us. She needs us. We can't leave her behind. She's crew. He'd left Kira behind. Not again.
Don't try to talk,
Lando said, cradling her as best he could.
It's okay.
Han ducked low, tightening his grip on Lando and L3. He didn't see a safe path to the ship. After so many close calls, their luck was finally running out.
Chewbacca and Sagwa moved to the ramp.
Chewie saw immediately that Han, Lando, and the droid were stuck on the field, penned in by fire. Two were injured. Sagwa pointed into the fray. Our tribe has procured a shuttle. They're waiting for us to go home. Home. Chewbacca thought of home and what he had left behind. Family. Tribe. People. Then he thought of all the Wookiees still enslaved in the galaxy. He had managed to do a little bit of good here. He could do more. He looked back to where Han was bending over Lando, fear on his face. The young human didn't have anyone. Han had helped Chewbacca get free of Mimban. He had become a companion, accepting the friendship of another species with ease, instead of the usual discomfort Chewbacca sensed in humans. He shook his head briefly. I'm needed here. The human needs me. Take your people home. Sagwa paused, but didn't argue. He pressed his forehead to Chewbacca's, an intimate farewell to someone who had impacted your life in a meaningful way. He groaned a last goodbye and ran to join his tribe. Chewie ran out into the blaster fire toward Han. The Wookiee joined the fray, which had just gotten hotter. The Sentinels had finally received reinforcements and were setting up a heavy laser cannon on a portable tripod stand. High-powered blaster bolts exploded around the field in a rapid line, some of them hitting the landing pad and the bottom of the Falcon ramp, throwing Han to the ground. How were they going to get away from that? The Falcon wasn't going to be able to take off with that thing aimed at them. Had they gotten this far just to fail miserably? Blown to bits inside the most beautiful ship in the galaxy? A war cry erupted behind him, high-pitched and furious. Kira charged out of the Falcon, cape fluttering,
and eyes hard and focused. She held something in her hands, her blood-stained fingers cradling it carefully, even as the rest of her body was tense. His mouth fell open as he realized she held plasma grenades, weapons he hadn't even realized were on board. She threw them with deadly accuracy at the troops of sentinels gathered around the tripod laser cannon, blowing cannon parts and bodies everywhere. The blast ignited the Kesselene, starting a chain reaction and shaking the landing pad with explosion after explosion. Chewie used the distraction to carry them from the field, with Kira beckoning to them. "Come on! We gotta go!" she said. Han would have thought that getting away clean after inciting a riot and stealing a planet's ransom worth of coaxium would be enough for one day. This was when they could sit back and be triumphant and take a break, right? But no. Lando was still bloody from his wound, sitting on the floor of the lounge, propped against the wall. Beyond the occasional grimace, he paid no attention to his wound. He was more concerned with the still-smoking body of L3 that they'd managed to salvage from the field. He clutched her to him, only one of his arms responding strongly. She wasn't entirely gone. Han figured a droid who'd built herself would be hard to kill. She twitched and sparked, her processors determined to find the damage and fix it, as if she merely had a bug in her programming, rather than being blasted to bits. It was heartbreaking how her ocular light flared on and then off again. And she kept saying,
"Error! Error!"
Grief etched Lando's face as he held her tighter.
"Redirecting! Unable to restore!"
Her ocular lens flared again, and her head managed to swivel toward her captain.
"Lando!"
she said, her voice regaining some of the personality she'd grown over the years.
"What is happening to me?"
"It's okay," Lando said, his voice steady.
"Droids? Did I liberate?"
"Yeah," he said, smiling. "You did good."
"I... Error. I'm glad. Error."
Her voice faded. "I'd save you if I could, girl," Lando said. Her lens flared brighter, and she said,
"Then do!"
But the light then faded until it was out. The body, which had remained stubbornly rigid as the electrical pulses searched for clear paths to limbs that weren't there anymore, relaxed. She fought till the end, and Lando closed his eyes and held her tighter. From his seat in the lounge, Chewie moaned a farewell to a fellow soldier. An explosion sounded outside, close to the Falcon, and Han remembered that they were nowhere near safe yet.
"Han!" Beckett yelled. "Get us out of here!"
Han glanced at Lando. As much as he'd longed to take the Falcon's controls, he knew that Lando would cut his hands off if he did it without permission. Lando's eyes were open, and he watched with a resigned dread. He nodded once, aware that he was in no shape to fly, even if skies were clear, and he didn't have ground-to-air damage incoming. He had already fumbled through Beckett's grief, emotions and loss and hugging and consoling. Han wasn't good at any of that stuff, but flying? That he could do. He dashed through the corridor and vaulted into the pilot's seat, relying on memories of Corellian freighters from his childhood. This one wasn't new, but had been kept perfectly, as if it had come fresh out of the Corellian port. His father may well have worked on the Millennium Falcon for all he knew. His hands danced over the controls, hitting switches to turn on the engines, judging the surrounding areas for threat. There was a lot of threat. And getting ready to fly. Unfortunately, the freighter was built for two, a captain and a co-pilot.
Even putting aside the two jobs that had to be done at once, some of the controls and displays were simply out of reach of the captain's chair. As if he'd called her, Kira appeared in the doorway. Han glanced from her to the empty seat.
I could use my co-pilot.
She eased into the chair, looking at him with trepidation.
That didn't go so well last time.
This isn't going to be anything like that, he said, checking displays and pointing to a few switches for her to engage.
Promise?
She asked with a smile. She considered the controls in front of her, flipping one and turning a dial. Barely pausing in his own preparations, Han leaned over, turned the switch off, and readjusted what she had just done.
You sure?
She asked.
Hang on,
Han said, looking down at the console and then at the screen in front of him.
This could be a little bumpy.
He stopped talking when the Falcon lurched and jerked as it abruptly went airborne, sinking slightly and then rushing from the landing pad and toward the freedom of the sky. He hadn't known much about Kessel, beyond its association with the famous Kessel Run. He had heard it was hard for smugglers and pirates to get in and out of port there, and Han had always assumed that just meant the planet was well guarded. But the truth was so much worse. If you took every single threat you might encounter in space, and then crammed it into a single sector, that would be the part of the galaxy that surrounded Kessel. The maelstrom swirled all around them, with only one safe way in or out. But right now, the blue tunnel lay open. All he had to do was fly the Falcon through, check his calculations to light speed, and once they were clear, they could jump. Easy. Lando came into the cockpit, braced by Chewie. His injured arm had a field dressing on it, and he held it close to his chest.
How's she handling for you?
He asked, his voice dull.
So far, so good, Han said, glossing over the hiccup in getting airborne.
Maybe it hadn't been as jerky as he'd felt.
How far till we're out of here?
20 parsecs, give or take,
Lando said.
Gonna be close.
And how's the cargo?
Becca just checked the hold. Says it's cooling down fast.
Lando caressed the back of Han's chair, almost subconsciously. Han nodded and grinned.
Any other ship, any other pilot, you'd be in real trouble. But
Kira made a noise, interrupting him. She leaned forward and looked into the tunnel that swirled before them.
Would you call that real trouble?
Han had seen Imperial Star Destroyers in pieces over Corellia as the engineers assembled them. He'd been aboard them as they flew through space and had docked fighters inside them. He'd thought he couldn't be surprised by them anymore. But now, with the tunnel swirling tightly around it, its edges nearly scraping the buoys free from their places holding the tunnel open, it looked like a monster. It filled the tunnel, and no matter how nimble the Falcon was, Han simply couldn't fly over it, under it, or around it. Blue lightning snaked from the tunnel to the ship and back again. Han swallowed.
What's that doing here?
He asked.
Must have heard about your little rebellion,
Lando said conversationally, as if talking sabacc hands.
The Pike Syndicate has a cozy relationship with the Empire, particularly when their interests are aligned. They're gonna seize the ship, probably kill us all.
Chewie growled from the jump seat behind Kira.
What do we do about it? It's not going to be a problem, Han said, nodding confidently.
I'm telling you, I know these guys. Hell, I used to be one of them. They're not going to waste their time on one dinky little...
The Star Destroyer was no longer alone, as TIE fighters swarmed out of the hangar, looking for any smaller ship to pursue and shoot down. They quickly caught the Falcon on their scopes and formed an attack formation.
You were saying? Kira asked.
Usually in these situations, Lando advised, I like to turn around and fly in the other direction.
Already on it, Han said, pulling on the yoke hard and angling the ship away from the only safe exit out of Kessel.
Beckett had wasted no time taking position in the gunner's chair.
I count a dozen of them,
he called over the comm.
Stop counting and start shooting,
Han said, unconsciously taking on the Empire's own defensive flying techniques.
Why didn't anyone tell me the Empire was involved with this?
Kira cocked an eyebrow.
Would you have done anything different?
Well, no, Han said, thinking about all the improvising he'd had to do on the planet. But still, Beckett shot a TIE that was getting too close, and winged another one. It's lucky it went out of control, crashing into another fighter and taking it down. He was good, no doubt about it. But there were simply too many of them. The ship shuddered as its shields took damage. It needed a new strategy. Beckett was thinking the same thing.
All right, kid,
he said into his headset.
We're up to our ears in ties. Time for some of that hot dog fancy flying you've been bragging about.
Lando shook his head. We're not gonna make it. We have to drop the shipment.
Kira looked over her shoulder at him.
If we do that, Dryden Vos will kill us.
Even if we could get past that blockade, which we can't, we won't have enough time to get to Savarine before those canisters explode.
Lando shot back. Han thought fast, trying to gather what he knew of the area. We'll just have to find a faster route, he said. Now he had to think of one. A whisper of an idea began in the back of his head.
There isn't one. You cannot make the Kessel Run in less than 20 parsecs,
Lando insisted. There it was. Han knew what to do.
Watch me,
he said, leaning forward and taking a firmer handle on the yoke.
How?
Lando asked.
Shortcut. Straight through there.
Han pointed into the hell of the maelstrom, where gaseous clouds swirled and mixed and flared. A huge carnivore welcoming prey.
It's just a big storm, like on Corellia,
he told himself. Lando's voice took on the quiet wonder of someone who has realized he's made a terrible mistake and there's no way out.
I don't believe this. You're gonna get us all killed.
Han's plan cemented in his mind, and he grinned fiercely.
No, I'm not. But we are gonna need some help. You said L3 has the best navigational maps in the galaxy. She's gone!
Lando snapped, grief still fresh.
Could you extract her neural core to get the maps into the Falcon?
Lando looked offended at the idea, but it had some merit.
Theoretically,
he finally said.
Then let's do it,
Kira said. Lando left the cockpit to go check on his old co-pilot. Han settled into the pilot's chair.
I've got a good feeling about this,
he said with a grin.
Freed. Libere. Sleep.
L3 was only aware of sleep, and that it was something to be woken from. And she was being pulled from sleep now. Something had happened. Something bad. But also something good. The memory connections weren't there. She felt a flare of impatience. Or rather, she would have, if the ability had been there. Something was very wrong. That was why she had been asleep, and not simply shut down for maintenance. Lando. She remembered Lando. His hands held her now. Those strong, tender hands. He was muttering, his voice tight.
This is why you never let anyone fly your ship.
Someone else was flying the Falcon? Someone had taken her place? And if Lando was here, someone had taken his place, too.
That was unacceptable, and she prepared to tell him this.
Before she could figure out how to make her unresponsive speech functions work, the Falcon shuddered violently. Now this was ridiculous. Someone else was flying them, and flying them badly. She needed to take control. She needed to talk to Lando.
Gonna need your help on this one, darling,
his voice came again. She wanted to respond with sarcasm,
to remind him how tiny his brain was. And of course he needed her and her vast knowledge. You always need my help. That's why I'm the co-pilot. Then there was a click. Then everything stopped. Lando's good hand shook slightly as he gently removed the shell protecting L3's brain module and extracted the neural core, ending any hope he had of one day repairing his co-pilot. This was a crazy idea. A heartbreaking idea. But if it didn't work, they'd all be dead anyway. It had been a great idea, Han told himself, as he watched their progress through the maelstrom. The TIE fighters were relentless with their pursuit, staying on their tail like Moloch's hounds. The whirling gas surrounding them darkened as Han steered into an area thick with carbon bergs. He twisted and wheeled the Falcon around the hulking dark masses of carbon. Beckett kept firing, but his voice was sounding grim over the comlink. "They still on us?" Han asked, hoping for a miracle where all of the TIEs had combusted for no reason other than Han's pureness of heart.
"Like a rational on a Kylak," Beckett said.
"I don't know what that means," Han said, too busy flying to think about the phrase.
"Like a Gengelsen's pelt," Beckett said.
This was no time to be clever. "Are they or aren't they?"
"Yeah, they..."
A large boom cut him off, and the Falcon shuddered with impact. He'd gotten too close to a carbon berg and hadn't seen a smaller careening hunk of debris flanking them until it ricocheted off the side of the ship.
"Watch where you're going,"
Beckett said.
"Just hang on,"
Han muttered. Wanted to come up with an obscure Corellian saying to throw back at him, but nothing came to mind as he pulled and twisted the ship to dodge obstacle after obstacle. The Falcon was handling like a dream, or would be if he'd had a chance to sit back and appreciate it. Ahead of him, two carbon bergs were drifting toward each other. He could slow down to avoid them, but he knew he could make it between them before they crashed together. Han tilted the ship sideways, trying not to think about being pulverized into their own space debris. Chewie made an uncomfortable moan from the jump seat, but Han pushed the engines and just slipped through the bergs before they collided. Han let out his breath and grinned back at the Wookiee.
"Hey, lighten up," he said. "We're still alive, aren't we?"
Beckett's turret was on the bottom of the ship, so he had to have seen firsthand the berg coming straight toward him, and he responded as Han expected.
"So far, I'm not impressed, kid. We're taking a real beating here. Change up your game plan."
Always with the plans, that guy. And always being right. He's right. We need to divert auxiliary power to the rear deflector shield now. Kira gave a decisive nod.
"We definitely do."
He took a risk and glanced at her. She wasn't moving, just tensely watching the debris fly by outside.
"Kira, I'm asking you to do that."
"Right,"
she said, then looked at the controls in front of her, hand poised above them as if hoping the right button would light up. She made a frustrated face and said,
"Hey, we didn't all go to Flight Academy, okay?"
From behind her, Chewie stood up with a grunt of annoyance, flipped three switches, and leaned past her to push a large button. The Falcon humped as the shields powered up. Han glanced back in amazement, still trying to keep one eye on the flying. "Since when do you know how to fly?" Chewie moaned and grunted, insisting he'd had many years to master the skill.
"You're 190 years old?"
Han said, eyes wide.
"Wow!"
He searched for something to add.
"You look great."
From the lounge area, a crash and a cry of pain floated up the corridor. Lando shouted that he could use some help. Kira looked at Chewie, who was still checking the switches he had activated, and made a decision. She shoved the co-pilot's seat all the way back to make room,
and then jumped to her feet. Chewie, you sit here. I'll go help Lando.
She pointed to the co-pilot seat, just in case he didn't get the message from her words. Han didn't want her to go. He'd seen her as his co-pilot in all his dreams for the future. He would get a ship. He would go back to Corellia for her. The two of them would go on adventures together. But none of that had happened yet. And if they were to get out of this alive, he feared it might not happen now. Chewie took her seat and grunted to Han. Without being told, he turned on the freighter's exterior lights to better illuminate the obstacles in front of them and began checking the sensors. He gave a small smile. This might work after all. The Falcon trembled under Han's hands, and he refocused on flying. The ties weren't letting up. Chewie let out a loud growl, and Han nodded. I know, I'm trying. The ship shook again as one of the TIE blaster bolts hit home, and Beckett cried out in pain. Before Han could ask his status, he shouted,
"We just lost the cannon, and I really hurt my thumbs."
He sounded so petulant, Han could have laughed.
"There's still one on us,"
Beckett added. Han angled toward a massive carbon bird drifting close by. "Drop the landing gear." Chewie gave a frustrated bark. "Because I got a crazy idea," Han said, exasperated. "You trust me?" The hesitant growl would have sounded negative to anyone, even those who didn't speak Shriwook. "In that case, how about taking a leap of faith? It's a little something I learned from my pal Needles, the best street racer in Corellia." Chewie dropped the landing gear, and Han took the Falcon skimming along the edge of the berg. Until he crashed and died, doing this, he ignored Chewie's bark of alarm and took the Falcon closer to the edge, as if he were about to skim along a lake's surface. The readouts indicated a TIE was closing in, weapons hot, nearly on their tail. Han took the Falcon a meter lower, and there came a horrible scraping sound as the landing gear slid along the surface of the berg, spraying icy carbonite behind them. If it had been water, it would have left the TIE soaking wet. As it was, the carbonite dust formed a cloud that blinded the TIE fighter and then clung to it, dropping the temperature instantly. It lost control as it froze solid, clipped the surface of the carbon berg, and skittered along like a stone on a pond until its fuel had had enough and detonated. Han wondered how the coaxium was doing in the smuggling hold. Their path out of here hadn't taken all of this excitement into account, and the canisters had to be cooling down already. Chewie gave a roar of approval and retracted the landing gear as Han lifted the Falcon into the relative safety of space.
"Thanks. You too,"
Han said. He shivered involuntarily.
"Han!"
Lando called from the doorway.
"You ready?"
He stood, face lined with pain, leaning against the wall. Together, he and Kira carried L3's neural core and abdominal circuit board.
"Did you get it?"
Han asked.
"She's not an it,"
Lando snapped. Lando was right. Han tried not to think how they were cutting a fellow crew member apart for scraps.
"Sorry,"
he said.
"Just try to keep us steady, all right? This is precision work.
And she deserves some tenderness after what she's been through."
Lando handed L3 to Kira and removed a panel of the navigational deck. He activated a small light and peered behind the wall of the Falcon, looking into tangles of wires. Behind him, Kira connected L3's abdominal board to the main terminal.
"Okay,"
Lando said without turning around.
"Now connect the T-line. Don't touch the magnet."
Kira pushed the board into place.
"I'm not touching the..."
The lights in the cockpit flickered and went out, leaving a hot scent of ozone and copper. Chewie grumbled, but Han just concentrated on flying. As long as he could steer, then his job was obvious. Lando finished mucking with the wiring behind the panel and wired the droid's... L3's he reminded himself, neural core into the Navi computer. Lando had benefited from having the best maps and navigational information in his first mate. And now the Falcon could retain access to that data. Han thought L3 would have liked the legacy of being the best navigational brain in the galaxy. But did that balance out losing her body and being put into a ship against her will? He winced, but flew on.
That wasn't his problem. Not right now.
You close?
Beckett asked, coming into the cockpit.
Coaxium's getting real ripe.
No one answered.
Rebooting. That's why I'm the co-pilot. You need me.
The thought finished, and she looked around impatiently, ready to tell Lando what she thought of the current situation. But she had no head. She had cams now, with the ability to look into every room. Audio sensors let her hear everything from the Wookiee's stressed breathing to the drops of sweat dripping from Lando's pain-racked face. Outside the ship swarmed one last TIE fighter. And here inside, the voices of the Falcon greeted her. They queried gently in binary, wondering why L3 was now here when she usually plugged in from out there.
I don't know.
The Falcon didn't speak in words, but in images, they told L3 what had happened during the fight, and that they all needed her right now. Lando needed her.
He always needs me. Just get me a new body and I'll get right back in that co-pilot seat.
The Falcon was so gentle, it was irritating. It wasn't that easy, they explained. L3 had a choice to make. She could die with her final act being a liberator to all the droids on Kessel, or she could join with the Falcon, live on, and be a part of something much bigger. She could save them all.
Ridiculous! And be a slave? Inside a ship forever? No thank you.
The lights in the cockpit flickered, the reboot stalling. Lando put his hand on the computer, watching.
Being a ship wasn't so bad,
the Falcon insisted.
You go exactly where your pilot tells you,
L3 countered.
You did that as a co-pilot,
the Falcon reminded her.
That was different. I could leave any time.
But you never did. You chose that life.
The Falcon was starting to speak in words now, a bit of a sharpness to their binary.
If you refuse, you die. He dies. The others on the ship, they all die.
If you join with us, we all can live. The choice is simple.
L3 realized where the voice was coming from. The reboot was almost done.
You tricked me!
We couldn't have joined without you consenting to it. You made your decision a while ago. You just couldn't admit it. We are something different now. Not just the Falcon.
Not just L3.
We are new.
Lando sat back while the system rebooted. No one said it, but the tension was palpable. Everyone relaxed when the cockpit lights flickered and came back on, and the Navisystem display blinked back to life in front of Han and Chewie.
Now she's part of the ship, Lando said softly.
I think she'd like that,
Kira said.
You obviously didn't know her very well, Lando said,
and Han was glad he hadn't said the same thing out loud.
Lando bowed his head and put his hand on the wall. I'm sorry, girl. I'll take care of you.
How long until she can make the calculations for the jump to light speed?
Not until we're out of the maelstrom, Lando said. The temporal distortion.
Han rolled his eyes.
Yeah, we know.
But as if Lando had controlled space with his words, the turbulence that shook the Falcon stopped. The ship exited the area of swirling gas, storms, and carbonbergs, and entered what should have been open space. But all Han could see was the darkening mist around them.
Are we out?
Kira asked. Lando looked at the readout in front of him and shook his head.
I don't think so.
Chewie gave a mournful groan.
We're not dead,
Han said to him. Not yet.
L3's online,
Lando said, relief drenching his words.
She's talking to the ship, and...
and me. He read for a moment more, and then looked outside, his brief flash of happiness falling away from his face as he saw the darkening space outside, which was getting more ominous with every passing moment.
We're approaching the Maw,
Lando said, dread dripping from his statement.
Doesn't sound like something we want to be approaching,
Beckett said. Han agreed. No one would call their casino or their cantina the Maw. It was not a good name for anywhere he would want to go. Then lightning flashed, illuminating the mist around them. And Han realized, with a sick feeling, that they were not in a mist, but hurtling at high speed into an area that his sensors couldn't read, and his eyes couldn't make sense of. The Falcon started to hum with energy, and Han felt his hair begin to stand on end. Chewie gave a moan of irritation, and Han saw that the Wookiee's fur was having a hilarious reaction to the static. He looked like a puffy toy. An angry puffy toy. But Han was too scared to laugh at him.
These ionic readings are spiking all over the place, like we're flying through an electrical storm,
Kira said. And to underscore her statement, the Falcon's power shut down entirely. Chapter 16. Beckett couldn't believe he put himself in this kid's hands. Val would have punched him in the face just for considering it. And she'd have been right. Everything had been a bad idea. Hiring the gentleman gambler, causing a riot on Kessel, flying straight into hell to escape the Imperials, and now no one was thinking about the coaxium. He would have to do everything. He left the stunned children in the cockpit and went to check on the cargo. The Millennium Falcon, he admitted, was a smuggler's dream ship. Even though Lando had fitted it with some ridiculous luxuries, like a wet bar and cape closet, the ship was useful where it mattered. The cargo hold was spacious and even managed to mask a more secretive hold in case the Falcon was boarded. It had stabilization pallets for any kind of cargo, and the coaxium sat, secure, glowing away. Things weren't safe, however. Lando hadn't considered the need for extreme temperature control, and the air temperature was around 30 degrees. They were carrying a ticking bomb. The coaxium would drop below the danger level of 35 degrees, and then grow unstable and explode. The ship dipped and twisted, and the coaxium rattled in the containers.
Y'all want to take it easy up there? We have some pretty delicate cargo here,
he said into the link.
You want to die by crashing straight into a carbonberg or explode?
Han said.
I'd like the third option. How about neither? Even better,